new songs are amazing, and I really, really love them. And
thank you.
And one thing I wanted to say about them was that they feel like they're part. I mean, I've only heard the three you've released, but they feel like they're part of the King's X catalog. Like they make sense in the catalog, but at the same time, they don't feel like they're you know, a nod to a particular album. It's not like you're redoing Dog Man or something, you know? You're moving forward.
I think this record has a little bit of everything that you like about King's X, hopefully. And it's not that we sat down and said, let's pick and choose things. It was more like we've been together for 42 years. And this is what we got to offer, each of us. And it's a little bit of everything we've ever, what, you know, as usual. It's always a little bit of everything that's in us. We just got more years to exploit it, I guess.
Right. But it's great that you guys are still pushing forward, because by now you could be phoning it in, like a lot of bands who have been around for a long time. You know,
yeah. But that is why that's why it took us so long to make this record, because we didn't want to phone it in. Right. And we felt like we would be doing that if we did it.
Yeah.
So we basically just waited until it just felt right. There was not even a conversation. It just, all of a sudden somebody just says, man, we got some tunes, but we could do this. Okay. And we just kind of went, you know, we don't take much time in making decisions.
Yeah. Isn't there some, you know, thinking behind that? If you think about something for too long, you sort of kill it in the process. It's more reactionary. Yeah.
Well, what we do is if we think about it too much, it turns into a joke.
Right.
And then we never get anything done because we're laughing so much at how far we've taken it outside the box, you know?
Well, I wanted to ask you about the role producers have played with you guys, because, you know, you've worked with a number of different producers along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Have the producers you've worked with really significantly changed your sound? Or have they been more or less capturing the evolution you guys have naturally been on anyway?
Well, I feel that, contrary to popular opinion, we sounded like we did when Sam Taylor got us.
Right.
Sam did a lot of things for us, and he mixed those records, and he produced those records, and he was like the football coach. Oh, he drove us. I mean, hours and hours and hours. You think you're good. You're up against the whole world. You practice that song again. You know, you did it 8 hours. Do it one more. Complain. You're just a pussy. You just don't deserve it. You know, I mean, that was the 4 or 5 years with Sam.
Right.
But he had something to work with in the first place. And even though sometimes he wouldn't let us know it, you know, it took us a while to realize that after, you know, looking back. Cause I listened to stuff before we met him, and it's like, we're harmonizing and we're doing these crazy things, you know? So I think he helped give us direction for sure. And without him, those four records would not be here, and they've done what they've done, and they are what they are, and I have no regrets.
Right.
Then Brendan came along and said, what do you guys want? And we said, we want a sound like we do live. You know, because the other records are so produced and so layers upon layers and layers. And so we went in the studio, and that Brian said, I can do that.
Yeah,
it was a smile on his face, because he had just did Rage Against the Machine, I think, and somebody else. And so, and when we did the record, we just were like, our eyes are bugged out, going, that's what we've been waiting for, something right. brutally heavy. Because with the old records, that heavy side of us was never translated on vinyl. It was always really thin, and it didn't rock. And we always felt that. It's still embarrassing sometimes when there's parts. You know, this should be, you know, power of love when we go chunk, 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 chunk. I was wanting to sound like Metallica, you know,
right.
chunk, 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 chunk. And we sounded like a little, you know, a little new wave band going king, 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 king. You know, and it's just that there was so much, you know, there was so much that probably going on in everybody's heads back then. And, you know, so anyway, but then Brendan came along and just kind of did that, and we went, whoa, and it was exciting, and it kind of gave us a new breath of fresh air in the music industry too. I mean, I watched people turn their heads again, second time, which was like, whoa, you know, you usually don't even get one time, you know?
Yeah.
So we got a critically acclaimed record, and then we turned around again and did it.
It's funny to me that you say you're almost embarrassed about the first records, because the first records are obviously loved records. Yes. I love those records. I've been revisiting a lot of the catalogue in the lead up to this conversation, and and Gretchen always stands out to me as, I mean, I hear what you're saying about the production side of it, but the the energy and the performance is astounding.
Gotcha.
I don't think you get that on many records.
No.
You know?
Well, I don't get that on us. that's probably why I'm so critical on our albums, because I don't get to feel what you guys feel. I wish I could. Maybe one day I will just get to experience that. Just only once. That's all I need.
Yeah.
And then I can just take a deep breath and go, okay. You know, because I don't want to know. I don't want any more of it. Just one little glimpse.
That's the one. The one downside, isn't it, of being the artist is you can't get separated from it. To truly experience it.
You can't. Yeah. It's like looking in the mirror at your face and go, tell me something good about your face. And you go, I can tell you 990,000 things that I don't like about it. I've been looking at it for all my life.
So day to day, though, with the various producers, I mean, you were talking about Sam Taylor working you guys really hard. Was that when you were rehearsing or when you were tracking, by the way? Or both?
Well, rehearsing mainly, because his philosophy was have the song so ready to go when you get to the studio that you do it one or two times and you're done, because studios cost so much.
Right.
And it was all about time. So that was his excuse. But on the other hand, it really made us a better band. It really, really did. I mean, I'm not gonna argue about that. And the cool thing about it was, I mean, we've been playing cover music and our originals in bars for 8 years before that.
Yeah.
So we were already well into being a band and creating something that, I mean, and every time we played around Missouri, it would only be two or three people, but they would lose their minds watching us. But we never could get a crowd like now. We never can get those humongous, everybody coming, but those people that got it, ooh, they stayed with it. And that's what I love about King's X fans, is because they're pretty rabid. What is it? Rabid. That's the word for it.
Yeah, and I think that, especially revisiting the catalog, I think that this music is almost too good. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't say that to pander. I mean that there is a level of like dumbing things down for pop music, and you guys never dumbed it down, you know?
No, we didn't. Yeah. Ronnie Dio, his wife told me last week at a Dio birthday party, or a few weeks ago, actually, she said that Ronnie said that to her, that we were just too good for people. They just would never get us, because we toured with them. And it was, you know, I love Ronnie. It was nice for him to say that. It was a kiss of death in some ways, too, because I take that back. It's not a kiss of death. I think we were really blessed, because we kind of got to see the music world from a standpoint that most people don't.
Right.
We never got famous, but we're in the country club and we're on the mountaintop. But we have to go into that country club with somebody. But when you get it, when you get in the country club, nobody knows.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tortoise in the hare kind of deal, you know.
And
you guys are still together and have had this really long, great career and made all this amazing stuff and have a long relationship with your fans. I mean, you don't get that sort of thing necessarily if you have this flash in a pan kind of explosion career,
right?
You know, that then burns out. Two years later, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
So when you're working with Brendan O'Brien versus Sam Taylor, or now you're working with, of course, Michael Parnon on the latest record, how does the day-to-day change? Like, is the difference more technical? Is Brendan O'Brien getting that sound by changing the mics or something? Or is it actually, like, putting you guys in the room in a different way or something?
No. After Sam, everything we've ever done is we get a producer, you know, Michael... my brain is freaking out.
Wagner?
Yeah, Michael Wagner and Arnold Lanny, who did that record, and who else?
Air Candy?
Yeah, well, Ear Candy Todd produced those three records, and we did them in his house in the garage in my studio. We just threw those. Those are our three that the fans say it's their least favorites. It's just because we basically didn't know what we were doing, and we didn't have enough money to make a real record, so we were just doing what we could to make a living. Yeah. But you know, but we put our hearts into them. I always say that we still put our hearts into them. But my point is, all the other producers put us in a room and said play, and we did it, and they recorded it and got great sounds, and you know, they'd steer the boat a little bit, you know, but usually all guys that I've worked with that produce so far have, except for, well, Parnon, the new one, we'll talk about him in a second, but everybody after Sam would just, we'd play a song and they just look at us and go, well, maybe we should do another take, but I got nothing to say. That's
fully formed.
And that's the weird thing about King's X has always been, and I always have to brag about Ty and Jerry, because I'll write a song and I'll bring it into the studio and they haven't even heard it. And I'll play it for them twice. And Ty might say, so how did that guitar part go? And I'll pick up my guitar and show them what I did. And we'll go in and lay it down in one take.
Wow.
And walk away. And I just kind of go, these, because Ty and Jerry, I really like that. They don't, they're like these machines.
Yeah.
And they put this emotion down at the same time. And even when Ty does a lead, I've never seen him look for a lead. I've never seen him searching. He just nails it every time. And on like She's Gone Away, the lead on She's Gone Away on the Mr. Bubbles album, that he said, I'm going to put a scratch lead on here and I'll do a good one later. And he put the scratch lead on while we were tracking the song. And when we got done, we says, you will not change that lead. And that is the lead. He just went, I'll just put something on, you know.
I asked Ty when I interviewed him a few years ago how he approaches his solos. And I almost found it annoying, because I find it really challenging to write a good, I'm a guitar player, I find it really challenging to write a good solo. And he was like, I pretty much just follow my instinct and grab the first take.
He just wings. He wings it. He really does. He's so good. And you know, and he can do leads all night too. You know, you give him, you know, an hour in a vamp and he can play a lead. You just keep on going and never ends. So yeah, those guys, what goes on in their heads? I don't know.
So that, did I read correctly that the new record has been recorded to tape?
Yeah. Yes. Basically, no. It's all analog except Pro Tools.
Right.
And it was run through tape and then saturated with tape instead of compression, and it was EQ'd with tube EQs.
Yeah.
And everything going down was analog. Everything.
Right.
So it's basically an analog record.
So you're tracking to tape, but using Pro Tools to control things.
Right. Michael is the guy that he's like the ringleader. He told me he went and listened to every King's X record all the way through before he came in to produce this. So I'm sure the man is a genius. He did his homework. He found all the things that were the good qualities or whatever. And I think instead of him telling us what to do, he just let us do what we did.
Right.
And he would like steer the boat, and whatever like suggestion we had, he would exhaust it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you come up with anything, it was like, you know, we're going to break this down, and you know, and so it, and that's what I love about this record. It's sort of like the Gretchen record, where there's layers and layers and layers of things. I was listening to it yesterday. I always listen to a King's X record until it comes out. When it comes out, I'm done with it. And yesterday I listened to it and I forgot what it was now, but I heard something that I never heard before. I think there was a backwards drum. Drums are going backwards on the left side of your speaker in the middle of Ty's lead on Let It Rain. And I never noticed that before. And I mean, there's so many things on there that talking, you know, things like, there's this one song, we do a break, and for some reason, Ty was doing a lead and said, man, it reminds me of Molly Hatchet. And so when the music went bump, I said, Molly Hatchet. And it was in the, you could hear it in the, so Ty said it first, what we were singing, we were doing vocals, and we got to the break, Ty just said to the mic, Molly Hatchet. And then I went, Molly Hatchet. Again, when the music came in, we were just being stupid, and Michael put it on the record, and you can barely hear.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I mean, we noticed that when we were listening to your records back in the day, that there were always like surprises, and that you could listen to the record 100 times and then hear something new. And when I heard some of the new singles that you've put out, one of the first things that caught my attention was that those layers are in there, and it really sounds like you guys are having fun again. I mean, not that you haven't been. I'm not trying to suggest you haven't been having fun, but
we might not have been. Maybe we weren't.
But that was one of the interesting things with those early records, is that there was all of this emotion and power and all of that, but then there were all these like completely off the wall comedic elements that made it so much fun to listen to King's X records.
Yeah, because we don't take ourselves seriously, and we like to have fun about. We make fun of things. I don't know why, but we always have. Listen, and Ty and Jerry are the funniest guys I know. I mean, they keep me in stitches, especially when they're together. It's like Mutt and Jeff, you know, Mutt and Jerry or whatever. It's cool. Yeah. You know, when you're around us, all we do is laugh and joke and have fun. But when we write lyrics inside of us, there's a whole world that each of us live on our own that has a whole lot going on.
Right, yeah.
And it has enough for us to have to continue dig inside of us and bring that other side out. And when all three of us bring our emotions to the table, there you got King's X.
Yeah, and there's always been so much emotion and in your lyrics, and your lyrics have always been so profound. I was walking the dog a couple of days ago, listening to your catalog on shuffle, and a box started, and I love a box, right? A box started, and as it started, I just looked up, and there was this big billboard that said, "We sell boxes." And I thought, well, firstly, isn't that funny timing? But then I thought, isn't that a weird poetic example of life? You know, you have this realization, everyone's trying to put me in a box, there's no room inside a box, I got to get out of the box, and then the first thing you look up and see is a sign saying, "Hey, come and buy a box and get in your box." and isn't that some weird poetic statement on the world?
Wow, that's like AI saying, "Get back in the box so we can control you."
Exactly.
AI knew. That new, exactly. The computer or whatever, yeah, it saw you playing that and it said, "Look up right now."
Get in line.
The scary thing about AI is, you know, the computer has figured this out to the point where it knows what we want and what we're thinking. I mean, you know, you're talking to your friends and mention you got to fix your flat tire, and all of a sudden on Amazon, there's a sale on bike tires.
Yes.
You know, or something. Yeah. And so they already know. And I'm doing my TikTok, you know, I get buried in that sometimes. And all of a sudden, some of the things that were coming up were therapy for me. They were all of a sudden things that I was dealing with. And it was almost like my friend was giving me comfort about things that I was dealing with. I'm going, wait a minute, AI is like reading me too much now. Look at what I like, what I don't like, and all that stuff. It's pretty scary.
It is, yeah. How do you find it when you're in an interview situation or talking to a fan or something and people know a lot about your career?
I'm always surprised that people know as much as they do, and I wouldn't tell it if I didn't want people to know it. Mm. And it's part of the program, and so far it's never come back to bite me.
Right.
The only thing that I've always had to deal with is I've said things that, you know, decades ago that I completely don't agree with anymore, and right. I'm still being judged for. So that is the only drawback, because people just don't realize this. You change like everybody else does. You're not the same person you were 20 years ago.
I have, on that note, I have always wondered, you know, you guys have always had to answer for this question around religion and faith and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Are you sick of that question? Is that something that's become a burden over the years?
I used to get sick of it because it was, you know, you don't go around, I feel like you don't go around telling people what you ain't.
Yeah.
Because if you keep telling them that, then they're going to keep bringing it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like it always comes up, so I always give an answer, which means somebody else is going to bring it up. And
right. And
it keeps bringing it up. In my personal life, it never comes up. Around the people that I'm with, it never comes up. And people that even hear, oh, they might have been a Christian band or whatever it was, they usually say, "I didn't know." And so I realized it's just something that somebody put in a magazine one time and made a deal about it. And it's something to talk about.
Right.
The thing was, is when we got together, we were three people that went to church. Ty was going to a Christian college and Jerry was going there part time. And we went to church and we believed, you know, we were those kind of people. We listened to rock music. We said, fuck, we did the whole deal. We just lived our life. But we saw that the music industry wasn't honesty. We're very honest people and at to a fault. And we saw that the Christian music industry was a bunch of, it was just fake. And it wasn't real, but just a bunch of egos and people wanting to make money and they could care less about you. And all you got to do is say the right Jesus words and they're going to go, oh my God, he's a man of God. And then, right, you know, then hang out with them for a while and find out that they're fake, you know. And now, don't get me wrong, it's just we saw a lot of that in the genre. And there were people that are pure people, don't get me wrong, and I love them. But I personally just felt like I don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
And when we got together with King's X, I said, we're a band. There's no C to it. There's no going out there to save the world. There's no evangelism. We're just a rock and roll band,
right,
playing music. And so that's what we did. And people, I remember when we first came out, Karan kept asking, so you guys sing about spiritual things. Tell us more. Are you Christian? Are you Buddhist or whatever? You know, and we go, oh, we're Christian. Jesus Freaks, Christian band. Bam. That was it.
There's your box.
That was
put
it.
Put in the box. Yep.
That was it. And and we have been talking about that ever since, you know, because if we had just said, yeah, we are, so go fuck yourself. You know, nobody would have said nothing.
Yeah.
You know. If we had said it just like that too, that's what I wish I could have said. Then it would have been all over because, hey, they're cool.
Yeah,
they're Christians,
exactly,
but they're cool.
So we spoke a couple of years ago. We did this a couple of years ago. And at the time I asked you, I printed this out. I said, some people are comparing this time to the 70s. Some are saying it was worse than the 70s and some are saying the opposite. Do you have an opinion on that? And you said, yes, it hasn't gotten worse than the 70s until the police come out with tear gas and rubber bullets and start throwing people in jail just for being out there. They haven't gotten to that point yet because Americans haven't gotten angry enough. Now, we recorded that episode on May 13th, 2020. And May 25th, 2020, George Floyd was murdered. And from our point of view, it looked like the US just boiled over. And we've obviously had a pretty crazy couple of years since then. Amongst all of that, how have you found your stability, positivity, hope? How have you centered yourself amongst all of this?
I realize is that this is not my problem. In my little world is this.
Right.
And I have got to get my world, my emotions, my depression, my demons, my everything that keeps me from being the best version of myself. That's what I focus on, because the rest of it ain't nothing I can do about it anymore. I've given up. It'll fix itself or it won't. And there's the only thing I can do is do the best I can to survive and help those who need my help, or reach out to those who can help me and we can figure it out together. But it's pretty hopeless. It's way worse than it was in the 70s. In a aspect of knowledge.
Right.
Now in the 70s, 50s, 60s even, we had radio, then we had TV, you know, then we had videos. Now we have internet, instant. Nothing's any different. There's been floods, there's been famines, there's been, just think of the Middle East before we had the internet.
Yeah.
It was worse.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, nothing's any different. China, whatever they're going through, they've been going through it. The difference is it, like I said, we have the information. I remember when I was 12 in 62, the earthquake in Alaska, it was very devastating in Anchorage. Well, my aunt and uncle lived there with their two kids.
Oh, wow.
And it took us a week to hear what anything happened. We had heard in the news there's an earthquake. That was it. And we go, well, how are they doing? A week later, we found out how they were doing and they were okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's how news traveled back then. And there was no fact checkers. So you could say really anything. My great grandmother wouldn't vote for President Kennedy because he was Catholic.
Right.
And she was Baptist, and so, you know, Baptists and believe that Catholics aren't Christian. Right. So, you know, yeah. So, I mean, come on. It ain't nothing different. It's just, it's in our face now.
When we spoke a couple of years ago, I was really impressed with your positivity. Like, the, you know, a very, I don't know how you'd describe it, like a glass half full kind of attitude. And I wonder whether...
yeah, it is.
And I wonder whether you, if I went back in time to, let's say, the 80s or somewhere around there, would I meet the same guy? Or have you taught yourself to get a more positive view over the years?
I've taught myself, you know. I've been teaching myself from the day I knew how to teach myself.
Right.
You know, watching and learning and what works and what doesn't. You know, I, to me, life is like putting your finger in a fire and finding out it burns. And so you don't put your finger in it again.
Right.
And you learn a way to get around it. And that's the way my whole life has been, my whole life. And you know, at my age, at 72 now, you know, I've got a lot of information to look back on for me to be more secure into the person that I am.
Yeah.
And no one can come and take it away from me. You know, it's like, I know who I am in so many ways, and I'm okay with that, whether you are or not, you know?
Right. Right.
And no matter what you say, actually, I don't even, it's not even an afterthought to think about it. Mm. That's where I wanted to go. I want to be natural. I want it just to rappel off of me and be able to just spew out love and positive energy, because I feel that's the only thing I can do.
Right.
That is worthwhile.
And I think what I'm learning is that if you grow up in a difficult situation, grow up with pain, sometimes that is your reflex. That's how you've been taught to think with your life.
Right.
And you just see the day that way. It's like you just see the negativity in things. And
right.
to teach yourself to kind of snap out of that and to focus on what's positive, because you can't ever get rid of all of the negative.
No, you can't.
And to sort of like rewiring your thinking. You know, which is not easy to do, but I think part of what's important to realize is that you're not going to get to a place where you arrive at happiness. You have to sort of get yourself to it.
Well, you get to a place where you're okay.
Yeah.
There is no happiness or sadness. Happiness is when you watch a TV show and people fall in love and you cry.
Right.
That's happiness. Happiness is when you see somebody you haven't seen in a long time, you give them a hug. Mm. Other than that, you go back to normal. And you know, and sadness is, you know, somebody dies or you're disappointed in something, and it comes and it goes. And as long as you let it come and go and do its course,
yeah,
you're okay. But if you hoard it or you keep it, both, either way, both sides, that's when the problems happen, because then you become addicted to one or the other, and it hurts, and it screws up the balance. You know, that's why I did. And, you know, after you live a while, you know, it starts to become a little easier, too. You know, I mean, I daily have to stop the negativity.
Right.
You know, there might be a text message somebody sends me and they're mad about something. And all of a sudden they say something, not at me, but I just know their attitude.
Yeah.
And I start thinking, oh, man, well, if I should say this to them. And, you know, I wish I could just tell them this and that. And they always do this. And they always make me feel like it's just blah, 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 you know. And I stop and go, wait a minute. This has nothing to do with me.
Mm.
Not a thing to do with me. And that just kind of washes it out. So that person's have a problem. You know, put the wall up and be the punching bag if you need to be. But, you know, understand, ain't got nothing to do with you. So hard to wrap around. Uh-oh.
What was that?
Wow.
Did the power go out?
Yeah. But. Okay, wait a minute. Excuse me for 1 second.
No problem.
All right, you there? Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem.
What happened was we're in 100, and it's 111 here today. It's unbelievable. And the electricity went down for a second.
Are we good for a few more minutes?
Yeah, we are. Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Sweet. If I understand correctly, you finished recording the Three Sides of One actually 2 or 3 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah. It was before the pandemic.
Yeah. And so has that meant that you've had more time to think about it and go back and tweak it or so on? Or have you actually left it?
It was done. It was done. We were happy with it. Pandemic comes along, and Michael was mixing it when the pandemic happened.
Right.
So at that point, there's not much to do, but just let him do it. Swipe Up was actually an instrumental, And while Michael was mixing the record, he did call me up and say, look, you have to put vocals on this song. This is now going to be a King's X instrumental.
Right.
And so I did. I went in and I made up some lyrics. And then we sent what I had done to Ty and had him put a vocal harmony on it. And then mm-hmm. we sent it to Jerry, and Jerry put a vocal harmony on it. Then we sent that back to Michael. So he flew those two voices, and I went and did them in the studio. Other than that, everything was done before the pandemic.
Right. And now that you've finished the album and had time to think about it, because I imagine that the way you put the album together was in a purely creative, just sort of put ideas together and didn't really think too much about the theme.
Oh, we were I came in with 27 songs. Ty came in with a bunch of them, and Jerry came in with some. And
yeah,
and we just pulled up songs until we had enough songs. I think there was 20 songs, and we got to like enough songs, and we said, well, you know, if we don't stop now, we're not going to finish this. So so we just stopped. You know, we got more songs. We got stuff for another record for sure.
So now that you've had time to think about it and you know, get to know the album retrospectively, would you say this is an album that's a comment on what's happening in the world more or less, or is this an album that's more of a distraction and a cathartic step away from what's going on?
You know, it's just me on my side of the lyrics. So it's just me spewing out what I see and what I feel in here, like I always do. Nothing's different. I just look out the window and go, oh, somebody playing a guitar, riding a bike. Okay, riding down the road. You know? I mean, it's not that shallow, but that's the way it is. It's just, I'll just be watching something, a documentary or anything, and all of a sudden I'm just like, whoa, I can't believe that. And I'll just, it'll bring some, conjure up some thoughts in my head about how I relate to it. And I'll just sing about it, you know? And
yeah.
I think Ty does that too. Jerry's songs are very introspective and I love them. They make me cry. They're really deep because he had a heart attack twice. And wow. So he literally did die. So to hear him sing about that, which is really deep, take the time and, she has to see me make it through the night. You know, Julia's wife, she's just, you know, she had to see him make it through the night. It was like, it's deep, you know, or,
you know,
and Ty, you know, Ty, All God's Children, you know, just about, you know, certain people who just blindly believe and, you know, and just, that's just the way it is, you know.
It's something you guys have always been really great at, whether you're writing lyrics off the cuff or really thinking about them. You guys somehow manage to write such thought-provoking lyrics, and they really connect with people.
Good. Yeah. Not with the masses, just those who have ears to hear.
That's right.
That's true, though. If you're the type of person that's down to that, you know, and you're looking and you're a real person, a reality type person, yeah, those things are going to affect you because we all are feeling that, you know. It's like, we're going, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, but then there's another group of people that just want to jump around and have fun and don't want to think about anything.
Right.
And just have a good time. And that's the other side. And
yeah.
I don't know how to write for them. I want to, but I don't know how. You know, I can only write what I feel, what I think. And you better believe that most songwriters, they're singing about what's going on in their mind.
Right.
All the time.
Yeah.
And if you're singing about fucking, that's what's going on in your mind. You know? if you're thinking about degrading women, then you're going to be singing about it, you know. And if you're thinking about Jesus all the time, you're going to be praising the Lord with your music, you know. So
how weird was it when you first heard the Letterman Band play We Were Born to Be Loved?
Well, we knew he was going to play it, and it was awesome. It was awesome. Paul came to see us play in New York one time, and Felicia brought him, she said. And I remember we didn't know he was there. It's a little shithole in New York. I mean, really small club.
Right.
And really dark. And it was like we went on about like 1:30, you know, and we did our set. And we get on the bus. As soon as we're done, we're all wet. And I'm pulling off my shirt and clothes, trying to put some dry clothes on and stuff. And the tech, one of our techs comes in and says, dude, I know we're not supposed to let anybody on the bus till you guys at least get 15 minutes to dry off and chill out, but Paul Schaefer and his band's out there and they want to get on the bus. And we just turned around and went, bring them on. You know, we didn't care. And they came on the bus, and we took them to the back, and Paul pulls out a joint, and we all went, yeah! And everybody pulled joints out, and we just smoked out in the back of the bus.
Nice.
And Paul looked at Ty and said, so who does your samples? And Ty goes, what do you mean samples? He goes, samples on your voices. And he says, that last song you did. And Ty said, Born to Be Loved. He goes, yeah, who does your vocal samples on that? And Ty said, that's us. I mean, we don't use tape or anything like that. And he went, huh, we're going to do that song on Letterman. And Ty went, yeah, right. And he goes, no, we're going to do it. We'll let you know.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks later, they gave us a message and said, tonight's the first, and they played that thing for what, 8-9 years?
That's right. Well, there goes the thing again.
Yeah. Oh, well, we got to keep this going because I got another interview to do. So
yeah, exactly. We need to wrap. Well, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with the new record. I've only heard the initial three songs, and I think it comes out in, what, 2 days' time?
That sucks. Why don't you have it? They should have sent it to you.
Yeah, well, I'd love to have heard it, but I'll hear it in a couple of days, and I can't wait.
Okay.
And I'm so all happy. Right. I'm so happy you guys are back together, putting new stuff out, and all the best to you.
Thank you, and let's talk after you hear it.
Love to. Thank you.
All right.
That was Doug Pinnock. Such a thrill to talk to one of my favorite artists. The new album, Three Sides of One, is incredible. I believe they recently reached number 10 in the US charts, which is really awesome. And I imagine it's quite a nice surprise for this band that's been actually playing together for close to 40 years. So 40 years in, I'm sure it's quite nice to have an album get to number 10 in the US charts. Not bad going. If you'd like to advertise on our show or give us any feedback or thoughts, you can email us at info@don'tgiveupyourdayjob.co.nz. If you value the work we do here, please consider going to our website and hitting the donate button. And please also consider following us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribing to us on YouTube and also the podcast app. And you know what? The other thing I always forget to say is if you subscribe to us on the podcast app and also go and leave us reviews on iTunes and some of those other places, that's really beneficial to us. That'd be very helpful if you felt so inclined. All right, now we get to today's song choice, today's artist selection. This is Sideways by Team Squad. Enjoy your week.
If you find what we're doing useful and you like this podcast, please do like, share, and subscribe, and give us a review on iTunes.